Hello, and today I'm welcoming back onto Radio Gorgeous a broadcaster, TV presenter, you may know her from Super Size versus Super Skinny, and writer who studied psychology at Oxford and speaks at schools, colleges and literary festivals about issues relating to body image and eating disorders. She is Emma Wolfe, and today on Radio Gorgeous, Emma is talking about her book, which has just been published, The A to Z of Eating Disorders. Hi, Emma, and a warm welcome back to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi, Josephine. Thanks for having me back.
So, The A to Z of Eating Disorders, why do we need this book?
I'm sorry in a way that we do need it, but I think we need it more than ever. It's the sort of book that I've been asked for by parents and carers and by sufferers themselves of eating disorders for years and years, actually. Just a place where you can get information, advice, and maybe a little bit of inspiration as well. A place where you can gather together all the different parts of an eating disorder, not just the scientific staff, not just the medical staff, all aspects are covered in the book and literally goes through from A to Z. And it's funny because when I started writing the proposal for my publishers, I was like A, you know, anorexia, amenorrhea, whatever. You start going through the letters and I was thinking B, C, and I just realized there were so many terms for every single letter of the alphabet. I had, you know, huge amounts of ideas and material. And so that's where it comes from. I won't say it's less personal. I've written a lot in the past about my own journey, my own recovery from anorexia, sort of over the last 10 years. And An Apple a Day was my sort of bestseller, and it was the narrative of that journey, that recovery from anorexia. And so The A to Z of Eating Disorders, it takes a lot of my own personal experience, but it puts it in a more impersonal context. In other words, it's grounded in what I know about the condition, and what I know about disordered eating, and what I know about the feelings and the experience of being unable to eat, or the fear of gaining weight, or, you know, the terror of eating cheese or whatever. So it's not a scientific book, it's not a medical dictionary, but it's very much grounded in someone who knows what it's like to be there. And I think that's very helpful.
Fantastic. So I think the most interesting thing I read in the book was that 60% of eating disorders begin with a diet.
Yeah, if not more, because although I always, you know, I always emphasize the fact that anorexia or bulimia, they're not diets. They're far more serious than diets. But it starts with that. And that's how it started for me. It started at the age of 19 with a massive breakup in a relationship, heartbreak. And I just thought, well, I'll lose weight. You know, maybe I'll lose weight.
How much did you weigh? I'm interested to know.
So I started out, I'm like 5'6". I started out about 9.5 stone.
God,
so
don't you think that's absolutely the perfect weight for a 5'6"?
That is pretty much, if you look on the charts, yeah, I would say that was pretty much bang in the middle of what you should be, nice figure, basically. And also I didn't care. I'd never worried about weight. I'd never worried about food. I'd kind of got through my teenage years without becoming one of these girls who's obsessed with their body or whatever.
Yeah, lucky you.
Yeah, lucky me. Exactly. I'd survived all that, I thought. And so it came from a place of rejection and emotional heartbreak rather than wanting to lose weight. But as I went on this diet, it morphed into anorexia.
How quickly?
60% of people start off on a diet. It can be dangerous. And also we're uncovering more and more about genetic links, about the heritability of eating disorders. And if you're prone to that, if you're predisposed, like alcoholism, like many other conditions, schizophrenia as well, if you are predisposed to have an eating disorder, this is dangerous. Going on a diet, an extreme diet, is dangerous.
So it is a mental health problem. That's what we want to get in the kind of out there, don't we?
It is. It's a mental health problem. It's also a physical health problem, obviously. But we focus relentlessly on the physical because people look so ill. But we have to remember it primarily starts in the mind. It's a mental illness, yes.
So what are the first steps for recovery then?
First steps for recovery, I think, well, absolutely number one is wanting to get better, wanting to be well again. And, you know, that may, it may hang around in your head for months or years. You may just get sick of people staring at you. You may feel fed up with being cold all the time or just very thin. You may be just wanting to do more with your life. But I think it starts with wanting to get better. Like giving up any addiction, actually. You know, I remember giving up smoking long, long, long time ago. I really got to the point where I was sick of smoking. And I think that's the beginning of your journey. It's not the be all and end all by any means. And it takes so much hard work. And I can't even explain how hard it is to recover. To start eating again and to gain weight and not to stop, and people relapse so many times.
Yeah.
It's so difficult.
Yeah, no, I can really see that because it's the opposite of what your brain's been telling you for a few years, isn't it?
You're absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
You are so terrified. And of course, I remember a psychiatrist once saying to me, you know, it makes sense, Emma. It makes sense that you're so frightened of food because you've been avoiding it. And it's just, you know, you've been avoiding it for years or whatever. It doesn't. In the wider culture, it doesn't make sense. You know, coarse food is delicious. How could anyone resist? And yet, you're addicted to not eating.
Gosh, yeah, that's
very,
the trouble.
It's very hard to start again.
It's so complicated. In fact, I was talking to a psychologist, and they said it is the most complicated mental health issue out there. The hardest one to cure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really believe that. And it also has the highest mortality rate, which is very, very worrying. One in five people will die from it, from anorexia, that is. And we, you know, we should also include bulimia, binge eating disorder, all sorts of other things, which are covered fully in the book.
That's what I want to talk about, because, you know, we're thinking about skinny minis at the moment, but what about people who are overweight, who are fat, even obese, or people that just literally, I mean, in my 20s, I was a binge person, so I would not eat for a few days and then go mad and eat 10, you know, packets of chocolate biscuits. And I know, looking back,
and the reason you did that was because your body was in panic mode. You'd starved yourself to try and lose weight or whatever, to slim down, and then you start to eat and your body loses control. That's completely, I've been doing some research on this recently. It's very, very interesting. We call it binge eating. It's completely normal. The body's got, you've forced your body into starvation, into famine mode, and then it gets some food and it thinks, well, I don't know when I'm going to get more food. She keeps going on these, you know, she keeps restricting. So it's very normal. And what I really want people to understand is when you stop restricting and when you stop binging, things settle down. It's very scary. Things will settle down. You won't feel this did you feel out of control?
Totally, totally. And I hated myself every day. Yeah, self-loathing.
You hated yourself. And then you probably followed up a binge with restricting again.
Yeah, exactly. It was literally for 10 years. Yeah.
But so your body was in famine mode and it was trying to get as much as it could sort of against the lean times, as it were.
And I tell you what stopped it. I read an article with Jerry Hall and she said, diets make you fat. And I suddenly realised if I moved over to healthy eating, which I do now, I make healthy choices. I've been the same weight. Well, I have put on a bit more because I've gone through menopause, which is a bit annoying. But I stayed size 12, 9.5, 10 stone. For 20 years.
And the point is, your body now feels it can rely on regular, good, nice food.
Yeah, oh what, so it won't panic,
It doesn't panic and then go into this, because it's like a flip switch, you know, a switch flips in your mind when you start to eat and you've been restricting and restricting. Your body can't cope. It just wants more and more because it's terrified of being starved again.
It
took me a long time to realise that, and that things will settle down, and people feel so scared of weight gain and gaining too much and all of that, and the body will settle down. There's one of the entries in the book, The A to Z, about set points. You know, the body has a set point and it will settle down once you stop abusing it. You know, once you stop starving it and then binging, it settles down in the middle.
Right, yeah, no, absolutely. And then it stays a certain, your weight stabilises, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, that's why I say to people, please don't weigh yourself. I have a big section on bathroom scales and why they're so evil. You just don't weigh yourself every day. People jumping on the scales in the morning, oh my goodness, they've gained 2 pounds overnight, which of course is water weight, it's fluid, it's anything, it's, you know, the time of the month. But of course they panic and think, oh my God, I've gained 2 pounds. So then they try and restrict. and then they go into a binge. The whole thing is just a vicious cycle.
What happens if you are overweight and you know you've got, you're about 3 stone overweight? How do you start, you know, and where do you start from?
Okay, yeah, I mean, I can only talk about this again, and I cover it in the book in a sort of emotional eating point of view. I think that a lot of people who are overweight or obese have similar problems to what I had. You know, it's disordered eating at both ends of the spectrum. And in the way that I was trying to starve my emotions, sort of, I couldn't cope, so I was trying to starve them out. I think people who overeat, and really significantly overeat, I mean, we're talking about a binge of, say, 30,000 calories a day, which is sort of, you know, 2 weeks worth of normal food intake. Mm. People eat that much in a day. Mm. And that's incredibly, incredibly uncomfortable and bad for your body. But I think that that comes from a similar place. So I suppose it's about, you know, addressing the underlying problems and not trying to stuff all your feelings down with food. Mm. Because, you know, you mentioned how much you hated yourself after even a small binge. You'd hated yourself. And then, of course, that leads into bulimia, which is another. I didn't have bulimia, but it leads into another cycle of self-loathing and, you know, self-disgust. There's so much shame around bulimia and also significant physical problems as well.
Yes, don't your teeth get rot from being sick?
Your teeth rot. The stomach acid is, you know, continually burning your gastric, your esophagus. Mm-hmm. But, you know, also it does all sorts of things to your electrolytes and your potassium levels. And it's extremely dangerous to be throwing up, you know, repeatedly all the time.
Yeah. And it's totally unnatural. Yeah,
I mean, it's... Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy how, you know, anyone can get to that level. I don't say crazy in a judgmental way. I mean, crazy in the same way that I would just physically not be able to, you know, eat more than half a low-fat yogurt. It's crazy that we could ever reach this stage. But I think it's... you mentioned yesterday in an email about our disordered relationship with food. I don't think things are getting better, really.
No, they're not. In fact, that I want to talk about clean eating. What do you think of this?
Oh, yeah. Lots of coverage of clean eating and social media in the book. And this, I mean, the whole landscape of social media, I think, has massively intensified the pressure on young people, on all of us, actually, on women, but on all of us, just to... You know, goodness me, we can't even have a breakfast without having to kind of take an Instagram snap and tell you, breakfast bowl or whatever you have to call it now. It just, there's so much self-consciousness around what we eat and what it looks like and what we look like and, you know, the endless selfies and the endless scrutiny of women's bodies, basically.
Okay, so, but I hate the expression, this clean eating. Are they saying that other foods are dirty and filthy, I mean, and bad?
I know, it's ridiculous. It's the moral, I covered this in my second book, The Ministry of Thin, the moral aspects of clean eating, you know, feeling good about things rather than being sinful and being, you know, being bad. And that this automatic assumption that anything like fruit and vegetables are good and anything like cake or chocolate, anything pleasurable is sinful and bad. And I think it just mixes everything up with guilt and remorse and, you know, we don't need all that. We don't need all the emotions around food. Ideally, we should all be able to enjoy indulgent things and healthy things in moderation. And I know moderation is the hardest thing. It really is for everybody.
Exactly. I was with a woman yesterday who'd worked in a women's clothes shop in Kensington for 15 years. And she said that every woman who came into the shop was not happy with the way they looked, even if they were slim.
Isn't it crazy? Even slim, even incredibly beautiful women. And what about 3 to 6 year olds saying that they're fat? What about 3 to 6 year old girls in surveys? Half of them think they're fat. I mean, this is ridiculous. It starts so early and we spend our lives hating our bodies.
Yeah.
So hating the actual bodies that we walk around in. I mean, I think that we wouldn't use the language that we use about ourselves to our friends. We wouldn't say to them that they're fat. And yet we call ourselves fat, ugly, you know, lardy, wobbly, whatever, many, many, many times a day.
Yeah, like I've just done a yoga class and I'm looking in the mirror thinking, oh, my stuff, I've got an extra roll compared to everybody else here, you know.
But you wouldn't say that to a friend, would you?
No, I'd say, look, it doesn't matter, it's fine, you know, you're healthy, you're well.
Exactly, you're well.
You're on earth, you're on earth, you know, enjoy the day.
No. Josephine, yeah. That really helped me with recovery, was starting to see, and this sounds a bit weird, but starting to see my body like a machine that needed good quality fuel to go in order for it to work.
So in a you stepped back from, even though you've been obsessed with your body, you stepped back and saw it kind of in a logical way, sort of seeing it as fuel.
Stop the emotional stuff, to get rid of the guilt and all the feelings around food, all of the fear. And it took ages, but I tried to start seeing it as, you know, this is you wouldn't expect a car to run on empty. And when you've been running on empty and doing huge amounts of exercise for 10 years, you know, of course your body's going to break down.
God. So what is normality then when it comes to attitude towards food?
Well, I mean, we live in the 21st century. We live in one of the, you know, kind of most developed countries in the whole world. So obviously we don't have a completely normal balanced relationship with food, and social media and all of that makes things even worse. But I suppose normal, I suppose what one is aiming for is that thing I mentioned about moderation and balance, and being able to look forward to dinner with your partner or with friends or just a meal out or whatever without any kind of fear or any kind of guilt. That to me is a good relationship with food. Is being able to eat three times a day and have snacks in between, is being able to enjoy indulgent or, you know, slightly more treaty kind of food as well as healthy food.
No, that sounds really good. So, you know, it's three meals a day and snacks twice a day. And if you know that and you keep
to
that.
But also not freaking out if you, maybe today you were working through lunch and then maybe you got something afterwards. Like, I suppose I was so rigid for so many years that for me it's just not freaking out when things aren't exactly how you planned them that they might be, or that, you know, it's not ringing ahead to restaurants and checking menus. It's not feeling bad after eating. It's being able to enjoy other people and eating with other people.
So, Emma, it sounds a lot linked to control and self-control. What do you think that link is?
Letting go, my third book, Letting Go. In fact, we talked about letting go a couple of years ago, didn't we? That was what we did before. Letting go a little bit, being able to let go and enjoy your life, and not letting food, not letting food and your weight and the shape of your body or your appearance dominate your life.
Follow, you make your heart dominate your life, you know, something more positive, or
your work, you know, and your family and your ambitions. And the thing is, when you have a really disordered eating, it takes up your whole life, and you think, oh, well, if I got better, there'd be this massive gap. What would I do? I've heard that a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But actually, getting rid of this crazy relationship with food, it opens up such a whole new world where you can do other things, where you can actually go and go to university, travel the world, enjoy a new relationship, have children, whatever it is. It really opens up so much space in your life that's not obsessing about calories.
Yeah, but what about people who are I'd say my mother, she's been a controlled eater all her life.
So is mine.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
Really slim and really careful.
Yeah, I've never seen my mum eat a chip or a chocolate, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you've got the same thing. So we both come from this kind of slight eating disordery background, don't we?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Honestly, I could describe your mother and my mother sound very, very similar.
Wow.
And it's not that helpful because they never indulge, basically.
Yeah, so you never see them let go.
They never overindulge.
Yeah, I've never seen my mum let go, ever. Never seen her eat a pudding, you know.
Mum might have a really, you know, a little slither of French cheese with a cracker, but it's all in a really elegant way. She would never just go mad and eat an entire tube of Pringles, ever.
Yeah, which is really healthy and normal, really, occasionally. Yeah. Once a week, you can do that.
Yeah.
So eating disorders, you've already touched on it, aren't just women now, are they?
Exactly. That was the thing I wanted to point out was that so much of this now is, well, we know that the figures are problems are increasing amongst young men, especially. I've been going into some boys' schools, which is really interesting and weird and unusual, but boys' schools where they really are having problems with male young men's eating disorders, but also this thing called, which in the book is called bigorexia, which is kind of muscle dysmorphia, where men, and you see it in gyms all over the country, men are getting obsessed with their bodies and they are working out to extremes, real extremes. Some are taking steroids, some are, you know, really damaging their bodies in other ways. They're becoming as obsessed with exercise as women have been about diets. And it's a real phenomenon. It's really worrying that it's kind of spreading across the genders, as it were.
Yeah, and their diet, because they've got to take all these vitamins and whatever. It's also, yeah, and they've got to kind of eat half a chicken a day and eat low fat, yeah. And
huge amounts of protein, and then very often that morphs into sort of taking bodybuilding drugs and things like that, and they become very irritable if they can't exercise, and they, you know, literally you'll see them going to the gym on kind of New Year's, Christmas Day or whatever.
God, so bad for you again, because it's you're unbalanced, isn't it? Unbalanced.
You're massively unbalanced. Your emotions are all over the place. It's bad for men specifically. They don't realise this, many of them. They don't realise that steroids can make you impotent. They can make you lose your hair. You know, really, it is extremely bad for you, and it's dangerous. And it's you know, it's not just young men. It's not just teenage boys either. It's older men in gyms.
Wow, amazing, amazing. So who do you think should buy your book?
Oh, well, everybody, of course. I mean, I think for me, primarily it's written for people that are going through this. And I do mean, you know, I don't just mean anorexia. I mean anorexia and bulimia, binge eating, any kind of issues with body image. But also I really hope, and I've covered, you know, a lot of sections about children and about families, the effect on friends and on family. Because what's more central than, you know, family meals with food within a family? You know, what about the effect on siblings? I always wonder and worry about what's my, what effect I had on my sisters and on my brothers and stuff. And when someone is very ill with an eating disorder, it dominates the family. It becomes this obsession, and it becomes, they sort of suck out all the attention because they need so much help. And it's just a really difficult thing for all the people around the sufferer, not just themselves.
It sounds amazing. Well, I've read it, and I read it in one night, just to let you know. Uh-huh. I couldn't put it down.
That's
really
lovely.
Really
thank
good.
So,
so The A to Z of Eating Disorders by Emma Wolfe is published by Sheldon Press. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous again.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And tons of luck with the book.
Thank you.
And for even more wellbeing interviews, always go to radiogorgeous.com.